Hi there, we really hope you enjoy this teaching from the Message Trust. To find out more about all the exciting things we're doing, check out our website, message.org.uk.
Wasn't that amazing this morning? Wonderful. One of the blessings of having that office up there is that I get to enjoy what goes on in this hall often, which is, you know, a mixed bag, I'll just say that. But this morning, it was amazing as I was prepping, hearing these guys. And the bass on it this morning, Sam, was making me window vibrate, which was just extra special. I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes you have absolutely outstanding, amazing, great days where, you know, you wake up in the morning. It happened to me the other morning. Woke up and I had scripture on my lips. Like, as I was coming round, I was like, wow, it's going to be one of those days. The sun was out. Everything was wonderful. You know, your neighbours are behaving well. And maybe you got visitors that come to work that just make you think that the message is just the greatest place in all the world. And then you have days where it doesn't quite go to plan. You know, those kind of days that they make movies about where it just goes from one bad thing to another. And a day of chaos or a day of hardship and difficulty. And I had one of those on Saturday, actually, when I found out that a guy that I've known for many, many years had died from an overdose and was found in a house some distance from our neighbourhood. A guy that I've known probably from the very first day that I moved into the neighbourhood. Him and this guy called Dennis used to knock about on our street. Lee was 37, same age as me, and so we kind of hit it off from that point. He's been an addict all the time that I've known him. And it was fascinating. The first time he came round to our house, me and Chris, a guy called Chris Nielsen from Oldham, lived together. First time he came to our house, we made food for him and Dennis. And then Lee went upstairs to the toilet, and I kind of left him for a bit. You know, I don't know what etiquette is when it comes to how long you leave someone before you go and see if they're all right. But he'd been upstairs a fair amount of time. You know, initially you're thinking onesies, then he's onto twosies, then I'm thinking he's having a poo daster and, you know, he needs some assistance. You know, maybe there's no toilet roll, or, you know, he's, you know, I was expecting like 14 flushes, you know, one of them kind of moments. And so I shouted up the stairs, "Lee, are you all right?" And he didn't reply. So at that point, I ran upstairs and the bathroom was empty. But Lee was in our front bedroom, not our front bedroom, we weren't living like that, but in Chris. He was in Chris's bedroom, which is at the front of the house, and he was handing our belongings out to his mate on the street. And so that was our kind of first, like, hello. A few things might be wrong here that we need to talk about. I did lots of work with Lee. You know, I remember taking him to rehab, taking him down to Teen Challenge, and just a wonderful experience. You know, me and another guy who was a former addict, we took him down and we worshipped and prayed all the way there. We got him ready and we'd taken him some lovely toiletries and nude pajamas and all that stuff to really bless him before he went in. And we were so, so excited. And you go into Teen Challenge and then they begin to show you around. And then this one guy said to me, "Oh, Sam, I just look, maybe you'd like to come in the kitchen and have a cup of tea." So he took me in the kitchen. He went, "There's no cup of tea. Off you go." And I said, "What?" He goes, "We don't do emotional goodbyes here. You just get out the back door, get in your car and don't come back." And I was like, "Oh, right, cool." So that's how it works. They don't want you to, like, you know, hug and kiss, and then, because they might change their mind. So you get in your car and you drive. And all the way back, we were like, they said, "You know, you were here for 6 months or something. Maybe you can come and visit then." And I was like, this is the greatest thing. Like, amazing. I couldn't believe I'd fixed him. It was just the most brilliant. And all the way back, we were just like, yes, God, out of your way, come on. That was the Friday. On the Saturday, just potted around. And then Sunday morning, church. And I got to church, and there was Lee on the front doorstep. And I was like, "Oh man, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, you just kind of left and didn't say goodbye." And I was a bit gutted. I was like, "Right." And he said, "And then I needed a cig, but they wouldn't let me." Oh, they took the cigs that I had stored in his pockets. They'd taken those from him. And so he'd walked out of the place and walked down the road to a local pub, managed to get a cigarette, and they'd come back to Teen Challenge smoking his cigarette, and they'd said, "It doesn't happen here. You've got a choice. You either stop smoking or you go home." So he went home. In fact, he managed to blag, like, thumb a lift into town, got on a train. I said, "What time did you get back to Manchester?" He'd beaten me home. Like, he'd got on a train. Like, you know what I mean? I couldn't believe it. So that was Lee. But my favourite story with Lee is I'd heard that he was sleeping in a bunker on a local golf course, and that is not a good thing for anybody to do. And so I'd taken him into town to a homeless charity. I'd rung them up and asked if they could help him find a bed. They said, yeah. And I said, what does he need? They said, absolutely nothing. Just come as you are. And so I headed into town, and I literally thought I was going to drop him off and then disappear. So I parked on this bit of wasteland, and then walked to this building and went in and said, here he is. And they said, oh, well, has he got his forms? I said, you said no forms. And they said, you've got to have certain forms, blah, blah, blah. So I ended up sitting with him, and we had to ring this office and wait for this to get sent through. And it was just turned into a disaster day, like a really bad day, just terrible. Anyway, I found myself there for 2 hours. When I went out back to the car park, there was a clamp on the wheel. And by the way, they didn't take Lee in. They just, in the end, they just said they had no space for him. So I put Lee in the car, and like trying to find, I was like, where is the sign that says they'll clamp you? And then behind this kind of thicket was a sign saying, if you park on this land, we're going to clamp you. And I was enraged with the injustice. And I had ringing in my mind my mate Pete, who at the time was like into like engineering and stuff. And he had told me about a story of a guy who'd blowtorched off the clamp. And with it ringing in my ears, I just looked around, and there was a garage, like a mechanics garage. And so I marched over on us, and I told him the story. I said, I've just tried to bring this guy into a homeless thing, and they wouldn't even take him, and I've come back outside and they've clamped me. And he said, they're horrible. They're rogues, aren't they? They're rogues. And I was like, yeah, they're rogues. I said, do you by any chance have a blowtorch? And he said, yes. I said, I'm going to blowtorch off the clamp. And he said, well, I would strongly suggest you don't do that, because that is breaking the law. That they have taken a photograph of your car. It will go progressively bad if you do that. And so we talked about that for a bit. And anyway, I went back to the sign, and I saw the number, and it said £90 fine. Like, ring this number. So I rang this number, and then I had to wait. I waited an hour for this guy to turn up in his car. And he got out, and he was Eastern European, but he looked like a weightlifter. Like, he was smaller than me, but like stocky, really stocky. And I said, £90? Are you joking? And he said, £90? Give me the money and I'll take you. I said, who has £90 cash on them? I said, do you take cars? He was like, I'll have to go back for the car machine. I'm like, So I'm like venting, like at this point. And so he goes ages, and then he comes back, and he's got his car machine in his boot. So he gets out, and I'm stood by his window. And then I see that he's left his keys in the ignition of the car. And something in my mind said, take the keys and do a deal. Take the keys and do a deal. Take the keys and do a deal. So I don't know what happened at that point, but I found my hand inside the car on the keys. Take the keys, do the deal. Take the keys, do a deal. So I took the keys. And I think I realised what I was doing at the moment, because I kind of was looking at my keys like that. And then the guy said, what are you doing? And I was like, what am I doing? And I said, I've got your keys. We should do a deal. And at which point he said, no, that will not happen. And I just held on to him. I just wouldn't let him go. At that point I was committed to whatever was going to happen. And he came up to me, he said, give me the keys. And I said, do a deal. And he said, give me the keys. And I said, or what? Or what? And then he said one more time, give me the keys. And I said, or what happens? What happens? And he said, I'll call the police. Now, I was like, at that point, hit me in the face. Just hit me in the face, I'll give you the keys, that's all fine. Like, but he literally walked away from me and rang the police. And then, you know when things go really bad, it happens to be that as he's calling the police drive past. Now, I know he's not on the phone to that car, but at that point, he runs to the road and flags down this 4x4 police like there's someone being killed, and I'm like, I am actually dead now. This is getting serious. So this 4x4 mounts the pavement, drives across, and then is by us. By the way, at this point, Lee has just been sat in my car beautifully the whole time. And so this police van drives on, and I'm like, what do you do? I'm dead. And so I try and get there first, like to try and explain, and this Russian guy, this Eastern European, I don't know where he's from, he kind of pushes me out of the way and says, no. And then he begins to tell him, and I'm like, you know that when you feel like you're being grasped at school, and you're like, no. And the policeman's like, can you go and wait over there, sir? And I'm like, oh. So I go wait by the car park, still got the keys. I'm like, what? I don't want to like throw them down or put them back, or you know, anyway. So I'm doing this, and he says, after he's finished, this policeman walks over to me, and I know I watch too much police camera action. I know how it goes very, very badly, very, very quickly. So I just made it. I'm told if you ever get in trouble, you just say the words "fair cop," and then you hand yourself in. That's what you do. So I actually rolled my sleeves up like this. I rolled my sleeves up, and then I gave him my wrists. As he came to me, I said, sorry, sir, and then put my hands out like, and he said, what are you doing? And I then, in like full of kind of tears and emotion and really scared, kind of said, just told him the story. And I actually think he wanted to give me a cuddle, but he couldn't. Because he just took pity on me, and he just said, look, that's a bad day, isn't it? And I said, yeah. He goes, first things first, can you give him the keys back? I'm like, yes. I give him the keys. And then I said, and then I said, bye. And he said, right, that's all. Like, I'm not going to arrest you or anything like that. You just need to go home. And I said, but, can you just stay around a little bit? Because I think when you've gone, he's going to batter me. He's really going to hurt me. He's going to take the thing off, and he's going to really hurt me. He said, okay, I will stay around. But all the time this is going on, he said, who's in the car? And I kind of forgotten Lee was in the car. And when I became aware of him, Lee had completely reclined the chair so he couldn't be seen, but was playing worship music at full blast, like full blast. So that I've got like Hillsong suddenly comes into my focus, like, and I'm suddenly reminded of what I am supposed to be. Like my other world suddenly calls me, like, Sam, you're a Christian. Sam, you love Jesus. Remember him? And so all this worship music comes into starker focus. I pay the thing and I get in the car and I just like sit there with this worship music on full blast. And Lee's just looking at me like, what are you doing? You know, I just realized in that moment how far I'd fallen, how I'd completely ignored God that day. I'd taken things into my own hands. I'd tried to do things in my own strength. And I found that I was utterly failing. I was completely empty. And isn't it interesting? I don't know whether you're like this, but in my darkest times, in my hardest times, I just lose sight of God. I think I just get so in the moment of what I've got to do and how I can get out of it. You just begin to clamber your way. And you know, like you're in sinking sand, you should always remain still and not try to flap about. I'm the kind of guy that begins to, I'll just climb out of this. And before you know it, you're covered and you're going down. You know, in those moments of real hardship and difficulty, and Saturday was one of those for me, as it came into sharp focus that I would never see this guy again, that he died a very lonely death without anybody there to hold his hand and to care for him. We begin to forget and get drawn into difficulty, drawn into losing sight of God and all that God can do. We become hopeless when we were a hopeful people. We begin to question some of the things that maybe we'd seen before. You know, we are blessed in this ministry with some incredible things that happen in and around us. Some wonderful miracles that we can say are undeniable. We've seen transformed lives and changed situations. But in the most difficult of times, often we struggle to see them. We lose sight of God. I'd forgotten even to pray that day. You know, I could have come out and said, Lord, I really need some help today. I could have prayed for a homeless bed. I could have prayed that the clamp miraculously fell off. I could have simply asked God to give me peace. But in that moment, I was acting alone, acting without God, and therefore acting the fool. I don't want to live a life that is in existence without dependence on God. I don't just want to exist. I don't want to scrape by in my own strength. I want to live the kind of life that is not possible without God. In the greatest sermon ever spoken, Jesus says these amazing words: blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed, full of joy, pleased and delighted are the poor in spirit. That is translated in one beautiful version of the Bible to these words: blessed are those who recognize their need for God. Don't you love that? Blessed are those who recognize their need of God. Blessed are those who recognize they cannot function without him. Fortunate are those who feel incomplete and realize only God can make them whole. Blessed, winning are those who feel empty and realize it's only God that can fill them. Joyful are those who know they cannot cope without God. There is blessing in realizing. Blessing in realizing, coming to terms with our own poverty, coming to terms and accepting that we are not perfect, that we fail, and that without God our lives are a wreck and a ruin. Blessed are those who need God's help. Do you know how much you need God? Or are you working in your own strength today? If you realize it, there is blessing coming. This makes no sense to the world. The world tells us that blessed are the rich in spirit. Blessed are those who are self-sufficient. Blessed are those who don't need God and that can handle it on themselves. Blessed are those who realize they can survive with no one else. My school pal, who I've known the longest in my life, doesn't need God. And he thinks he's a great success. That his life is sorted. He has a good job, a nice big house, two cars and a dog. And he got married at the weekend. He thinks he's a self-made man. He has no need of a creator. A creator God who makes man and sustains man. He has no need of a God who provides and a God of love. But blessed are those who recognize their need of God. The kingdom of heaven, we're told, belongs to the insufficient, the inadequate, the incompetent, the deficient, the lacking, and the needy. That is what's wonderful about our God, what is wonderful about his kingdom. It's not for the fixed and the sorted and the ready, it's for the lacking and the needy. Heaven is for those dependent upon God. Those leaning on God, those hoping in God, those helpless without him. We are blessed because we have nothing but him. When we're stripped away of all that the world could offer, guess what we're left with? Only heavenly stuff. The kingdom of heaven belongs to the blessed. The kingdom of heaven belongs to the poor in spirit. When we're stripped away of all the world has for us, we are left with heaven. In the last few days, I've been thinking about this passage from Hebrews 12. Let me read it to you. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition for sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Sometimes the race is hard. Sometimes there's those great days where everything is perfect. But let's be honest, our race is often punctuated by seasons of difficulty and hardship. Heaven feels like a long way away sometimes. We are called to endure the race. This race is not a sprint. We are called to keep on going. this passage offers us some tips for the race. The first one is this: throw off everything that hinders. Get rid of all the stuff that weighs you down. This is what Team Sky and the Tour de France are specialists in. They're known as the marginal gains team. They'll think about everything that reduces weight, reduces drag, increases work efficiency, maximizes power. They've changed the shape of the very cogs which you ride on. They've stripped down to the lightest possible fabric and streamlined everything they can, because they want to work to maximum efficiency. They want to throw off everything that hinders. As you might have known, we boys, some of us lads, we did this dinghy thing on Friday, going down the River Mersey. At one point, me and Simon Baker were well ahead, and as we looked back, we wondered why these guys were so slow behind us. It's because they were towing a giant swan and a giant inflatable unicorn. And so I rang Chipper and said, "Is everything all right?" He said, we're struggling right now." And I said, ditch the unicorn. Like, pop it, snap it, get rid of the swan. This is not helping you right now. Like, we were in a difficult, we're like this 5 mile stretch of hard going. Do not take them with you. Like, it's okay. And Sid's like, they cost me £10 each. Tess is going to batter me if I don't come home with a giant swan. Get rid of them.
Yes, amen.
Working efficiently in the kingdom means holiness. Marginal gains in the kingdom is righteousness. Sin is heavy. It holds you back. It trips you up. Take it off. Throw it down. Sin does not help you run. Sin only helps you sit down and do nothing. That ain't running, by the way. Secondly, we're told this: to fix our eyes. Fix your eyes. Don't look at anything else. Only look at Jesus. Blessed are those who fix their eyes on Jesus. Blessed are those that only see Jesus as the way forward. Blessed are those who don't lose sight of him. Blessed are those who stare in his face in the face of hardship. You just can't get enough of Jesus. This is where I go so wrong. When it gets hard, I kind of bunker down and I just keep like, if I just keep going, it'll be okay. Stare at Jesus. When you look at Jesus, you're reminded that he is the reason for the race. That it's his love that kick-started our faith. That it's Christ's fault that you're running. Like, when it gets really hard and you think, why am I running? Just look at Jesus. It's his fault. But as you fix your eyes on Jesus, you see that he is the perfecter of faith. There is not many more titles for Christ that I love than perfecter of faith. He helps us finish. He helps us complete. What he started, he will outwork. Jesus is the starting gun and the finish line. When we look at him, we realize the race is worth it. Check out Jesus. He knows the race. He ran it himself. He kept going and he did not give up. What does it say? For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus didn't have an easy race, but he kept going. The passage doesn't read like this: for the joy set before him, sat down in his shame. It doesn't read, for the joy set before him, he quit. For the joy set before him, he watched an entire box set and ate chocolate. He was unrelenting in pursuit. For the joy set before him, he endured. He endured the cross, a terrible, horrific, public death of a criminal, and he smashed it. He scorns its shame. He didn't carry its shame, the shame that he felt. He scorned it. You know what that means? He thought little of it. It's like, whatever. Whatever shame. You can't touch me. Smashing it. And then he sits down. When he's done, when he's finished, he sits down. And he sits down where? He doesn't sit down in his shame. He sits down next to the throne of God. You can't hold this guy back. He only sits down when the race is done. Blessed are those who fix their eyes on the one who completed the race. Blessed are those who focus on the only one that's ever done it perfect. Blessed are those who focus on the one that can help. So thirdly, we're told to consider him. Consider him. This is one for the accounts team. Consider means check that things add up. Analyze. Analyze him. Think upon him. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you don't grow weary and lose heart. See, Jesus didn't have an easy race. He had to endure the cross and scorn its shame and then sit down. But he didn't just have that. He had to face continual opposition. Opposition from sinners, even though he's a righteous man. So consider him. Analyze the one who kept going, even though he was excluded by all. Add up the actions. Consider the actions of the one who was despised and rejected by the mankind he came to save. Consider him. Did he get it wrong? Did he act out? Did he punch? Did he fight? Did he scream? Did he shout? Did he get it wrong? Consider him. Consider him who endured. Consider the man of suffering, familiar with our pain. Consider the one from whom people hide their faces. Consider the one despised and held in low esteem. Consider the one who took our pain and bore our suffering. Consider the one who was punished and stricken and afflicted by God himself. Consider the one punished, whose punishment brought us peace. Consider the one oppressed and afflicted. Consider the one who did not open his mouth, but was led like a lamb to the slaughter. Consider his love. Consider how much he wants you in heaven. Consider all he's done to make the race possible. Consider how much he wants you to succeed. Consider how much he wants to help you reach the end. Consider where he is now. He's at the finish line. He's in heaven and he's sat with his Father. Where does he want you? He wants you with him. He calls you. Keep going. Don't give up. Consider me and endure. Consider me and don't lose heart. Consider me and don't give up. Consider all that I did. Consider all that I am. Consider where I am. I'm sat with the Father and I want you here. Consider him who is able. Consider him who is willing. Consider him who is ready. Blessed are those who consider Christ. Blessed are those who recognize he can help. Blessed are those who never lose sight of all he can do. Let's pray. So we consider you, Jesus. We consider your perfection, your righteousness and your holiness. We consider the depths of your love. We consider your incredible forgiveness and your wonderful, wonderful mercy. We consider your grace. We consider those words that tell us you'll never leave us or forsake us. We consider that you're always helping us. Lord, help us to endure. Help us to continue on. Help us to continue to consider you. Help us not to lose sight of you, Lord. Help us not to try and do this on our own, to try and do it in our own strength. Help us to embrace our poverty and our need of you. Grow in us, Lord, a need of you. Strip us of this world, Lord. Give us heaven. Thank you that you're waiting. Thank you that you've gone to heaven to prepare a place for us. We thank you, Lord, that you're on us, that you're helping us. Your willingness to help us is incredible. We love you, Jesus. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out message.org.uk to find out how you can support or even get involved with one of our teams.